What is up, everybody? This is Sean with the EOT News Flash Network. Just want to let you know that our show is brought to you this week by Flipside Gaming. Make sure to go over to flipsidegaming.com to get all your singles, sealed product, comic books, and many other needs. Again, that's flipsidegaming.com. Use our promo code EOT News Flash to get yourself 10% off your order and give our show a nice little kickback. Now on to the show.
Welcome back to EOT News Flash Network. This is Sean, a.k.a. Busted Sleeves, returning for another week after the holidays are starting to die down and get a little more consistent. This week, I am joined by our good friend, Justin. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. Glad to be here.
Good. We were off and on for the last couple weeks with the holidays. Now the holidays are done, we're going to be a little more consistent. Of course, getting out of the holiday funk, we're going to have some problems with our videos, so you won't see our pretty faces on this one, but we'll still have plenty of good content to go over. As we're getting into this podcast, one of the first things I want to talk about is we are in spoiler season. And while we're going to eventually do probably card reviews and things like that as we go down the line, one of my favorite and most frustrating things that happens in spoiler season is the constant debate of whether or not cards are healthy and whether or not cards are unique or special to Magic or reprints of previous parts of Magic or just new to Magic in general. It seems like every spoiler season, regardless of where you're at, I see in the forums a lot of people who say, this card looks similar to a card designed in Hearthstone, or this card looks similar to a card designed in a different deck building game, whether it's a TCG or a boxed deck building game like a DC or something like that. And that conversation constantly comes up. And I'm not a part of other communities. I play Hearthstone casually, but I'm not heavily tied in other communities. But Magic players vehemently protect the fact that their content is better, more unique, more special, and in no way would they ever steal from Hearthstone. Do you see that pretty often, Justin?
I see a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of people saying this is ripoffs. I see a lot of people saying that, you know, no, Magic, you know, did this on their own. I've seen things where it's like, no, people are ripping off from Magic. So it's just a little bit of everything from what I hear.
Well, and so if you follow any form of major media, actually any form of anything that's developed in the world, this is how things work. Because we haven't had unique ideas in decades, for the most part. If you look at movies, for example, movies is like one of my favorite go-tos because it's one of my other big hobbies. If you look at movies, everybody complains about how today, like, oh, movies aren't original anymore. They're rehashes of this old story. Avatar is just Dances with Wolves, but with blue people. And, like, it's this constant argument, and it's...
Oh, I always call it Space Pocahontas.
Or Space... See? Space, so it's all stealing from everything else. And so... But, like, we act like that's something that is okay in some mediums, but our beloved game of Magic the Gathering would never steal ideas, and Hearthstone's the one stealing ideas, which isn't actually the case. So an example I saw today was somebody pointing out, like, hey, there's this Enrage mechanic. That looks a lot like a mechanic you've seen in Hearthstone before, and it's paying off in a very similar way. And then somebody else gets defensive, and it's like, oh, well, I'm sure Hearthstone's never done anything like this, and Hearthstone's, you know, all full of original ideas and stuff. And it's like, no, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing, and that doesn't necessarily mean that it's one-sided. For, like, Hearthstone has a card called Lightning Bolt. It costs one mana. It deals three damage. Like, did they not know the other card existed? Unlikely. I mean, Hearthstone, they've gotten their employee base advertising that if you've top-aided a Pro Tour or you have a degree in game design, they will do an interview with you, which means, like, even if you don't have a degree in this job industry, if you've top-aided this competitor's game, we'll listen to you because you understand that competitor. So, like, it's very plain. Yeah, Hearthstone steals from Magic, and Magic will also take ideas from Hearthstone. But, I mean, what do you think? Is that a good thing or a bad thing, Justin?
I think right now it's a good thing. It could become a bad thing if... for example, I'm going to use League of Legends as an example. There are games that will directly rip off, like, ability by ability, the lore. Like, it's just a blatant ripoff of another thing. And to the point where it's like, why did you even bother? I think if it ever got to that point, it would be bad. But right now what it is it's two companies that are competing and building upon each other's ideas that have worked to make something better. Like, Enrage in Hearthstone is a really cool mechanic. However, Enrage there does not have all of these interactions that these dinosaurs have in Ixalan, because Magic was able to look at Enrage from Hearthstone and be like, okay, hey, we're doing this. Well, what if we just shift it a little bit and try this cool thing?
Yeah.
And that's where we are now.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where, like, they're different games. They have very many similarities, but mm-hmm. the way they're played out because of the medium that they're used and because of the way the game is designed, the way they play out is not always 100% equal. Mm-hmm. And so with that, you end up having some changes. I've always been of the opinion that this is fine. This is good for their business. And this is also good for game design in general. Because now, instead of having to design this entire set from the top down, they can take what is known as successful quantities in the game and use those as plugger cards. And then take other people's ideas, tweak them to match your game's design, and really kind of get a feel for whether or not you can adjust a mechanic that somebody else has been successful with. And so I think it's a good thing overall. There's like a lot of people who got real defensive and upset whenever people would point out, like, well, Magic is going to Pirates and Dinosaurs, which Hearthstone just left. They came out very, very similar time frame. So odds are is it's not that one necessarily stole from the other. That's very possible. It's very likely. But it takes so long to design these sets. It's really just corporate exchange and corporate espionage, really, is really what's happening. It's not a coincidence that these two sets that are very similar on different games are coming out at the same time. It's that this company catches wind of this, and so they make their own. It's why you won't see a Western movie for 2 years, and then all of a sudden in 2019, we get four Western films from different production companies because they hear another company's working on one. And so they go, well, if I jump onto that train, I don't have to spend as many ad dollars and spend as much ad revenue hyping up my Western because they're hyping up their Western and we just piggyback it. So overall, I would say when people point that out, it's normally people who aren't paying as much of attention. Maybe people who don't have as much of a knowledge of the game and they're starting to notice trends, which is a good thing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I think overall it's a good thing. I see a lot of people get real defensive. It's like, it's not an affront to your game. It's just where we're at right now. So that's my two cents. But I mean, moving forward from the rant, just because it happens every season. So I always want to talk about the fact that that's completely fine for that kind of thing to happen. We are going to dabble in spoilers. Now, we won't go into spoilers really heavy every week. We will try to do maybe a set review if we get a good feedback that people want to have a set review. But we're going to talk about a couple cards that are going to impact standard. And we're going to try to look for one or two cards that are going to impact internal formats as things are coming out. So diving into our first card, I want to talk for a little bit about Silvergill Adept, which is a staple in Merfolk and Legacy and in Modern. It's a 2-mana, 2/1 Merfolk. When it comes into play, you draw a card. It costs 3 extra mana to cast unless you reveal a Merfolk card from your hand. Merfolk in Standard, playing a little bit of Arena and playing in Paper and testing different things. It's just a good deck that has a good tempo. It can have a lot of interaction. It can give some evasion. It can keep your opponent off a little bit while you get a big enough board that has enough synergies where you overrun somebody. And so now that deck gets to run with like a slightly smaller deck, which I think is going to be a huge impact. Personally, I think Silvergill Adept is going to be really big. And I know, Justin, you had a card that was also tribal themed for what was your tribe? What were you wanting to look for more cards from?
I'm super hard on pirates. Like, pirates are my allies of Ixalan. Anyways, anyone who knows anything about me knows I'm obsessed with allies. But the pirates they were short, you know, just like a couple cards from being a real deck last standard season. I mean, I don't know. Maybe even with those couple cards, maybe they couldn't beat Energy. Who knows? Because Energy is ridiculous. Yeah, not going to get into that. but we just got a couple new pirates that I wanted to talk about. The first is Stormfleet Sprinter. It reminds me a lot of Storm Chaser Mage. 2-mana, 1/3 flyer, prowess, hasty guy. This one is hasty, can't be blocked, 2/2. And, I mean, he's not a bad clock for a aggressive tempo deck that wants to just be getting in for damage every turn. So I think he's really going to help push the blue-red, possibly the Grixis versions of Pirates.
Yeah, definitely. That's fair. And a lot of the Pirates have Menace and things like that, so the evasion's always good, and this one's just flat-out evasion.
Yeah.
So what's your next one?
My next one is Dire Fleet Daredevil, or as I like to call him, Reverse Snapcaster Mage. He's red and one. He has first strike. And what he does is he looks at your opponent's grave, exiles a instant or sorcery from their grave, and until the end of the turn, you can cast that spell using any color mana when you tap your lands. And he's a 2/1. So he's going to be really good in the mirror. Just because, you know, you can play him on turn 3, push their guy, and then, you know, get in for extra damage. I'm not sure what he's going to do a whole lot against, like, Merfolk, for example. But against Energy, I mean, they've got 1.5 million removal spells in their deck that you get to use. I really want to see, like, someone do some shenanigans against a control deck with this thing and just like screw with the control player with their own spells.
Yeah. No, I think this card looks cool, and I can even see like in Modern where you play this and get to take their discard spell and play their discard spell against them. Like, it's super cool. The thing with Pirates as well as my next card I'm going to talk about are a lot of these cards are going to be impacted with how much longer Energy's around, whether or not it's all the way until next fall or if we see a change before that. But it has a strong effect in Pirates. Like, they have a lot of cool things they can do. It's just a matter of whether or not they can survive the onslaught that is Energy with the size that they get. My card, I don't think, is a thing until Energy leaves, but it's Rekindling Phoenix, which is a 4-mana, 4/3 flyer. When it dies, you get a 0/1 elemental creature token that says at the beginning of your next upkeep, you sacrifice that token, you return this Phoenix from the graveyard to the battlefield, and give it haste. So it's a 4/3 for 4 with flying, which is pretty good. And then they have to spend 2 removal spells to get rid of it. Now, while Energy is around, I don't know if you want to be playing something that like dies to Glorybringer and doesn't really do a lot of its own things. And also Fatal Push just like picks off the token so easily. But I could see this card being a thing like once Aether Revolt is gone, because it's just an unrelenting threat that's just going to keep going. If you can dodge Settle the Wreckage and like the cast out style effects, this thing can be a real problem moving forward. So, ideally in Standard, it's not a thing yet, but I would love to see a thing like this Phoenix be... Because I remember playing Ashcloud Phoenix, which you would be able to like bring back and morph and unmorph and do all these shenanigans with. So I would love to see this card actually have a home. I don't think it will right away, because like everything else in Standard, Energy is choking it down. But I think eventually it will be a thing.
Speaking of him, I've actually have a couple of friends who are Jund players in Modern that are saying that they want to see him in their deck, because he's a very recursive threat that's hard to get rid of. I mean, it requires at least 2 removal spells, or you know, blocking into it then a removal spell. So
I could see him out of the sideboard. The only problems I would have would be like against Grixis, you can't kill their 5 toughness guys, and against most decks in the format, for 4 mana not having an impact until turn 5, you'd rather play like a Hunt Master of the Fells, because you get 2 bodies and gain some life. But I could definitely see it. Like, he is unrelenting. And so if they don't have like a Scavenging Ooze or something, like, they're not going to bring in Graveyard Hate typically. Sometimes they'll bring in something for your Goyfs, but like, I could see that being a thing. It's just a matter of whether you... It depends on the format. It's probably like a sideboard card for like the more controlling matchups.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but I could see that. I can get behind that. So our other 2 cards we're going to talk about, these are mostly Standard implications. We're going to talk about 2 cards that we think are going to have an impact in Modern or other Eternal formats. Just something they're going to do. And sticking with our Tribal theme, Justin, what's your card that you think is going to have an Eternal impact?
Well, I'm going to be talking about a Merfolk this time around. I'm talking about Kamina, Tyrant of Orzakha. I think this is the card that Tropical Merfolk needed, because with adding the fetch lands, with adding the green, it became difficult to really have a payoff from Master of Waves, so people cut it, which, you know, did speed up the deck. It did make your first four turns far more aggressive, but you just didn't have that boss monster to, like, turn things around if the game lasted too long anymore. And Kamina does that, because, like, if you get into a board stall situation where you can't get through with damage because you don't have Island Walk yet or whatever, I mean, you can tap a Merfolk and just do two damage. You can tap three Merfolk to dig further into your deck if you can't be attacking for some reason. And then once you have enough Merfolk on the field and you're tapping five a turn, like, in those board stall situations, eventually your Merfolk get too big for your opponent to be able to handle, and then you get to start swinging it anyways. So he's not necessarily great in the sense that he's just another aggressive, you know, he's not just going to add to the speed of the deck, but he gives the deck a very powerful inevitability card, similar to how Endbringer is in Eldrazi Tron.
Yeah, I think he's that's the biggest thing is Merfolk's already not a great match for Eldrazi, but, like, one of my first thoughts with this card is you don't want to play it into, like, control decks with board sweepers. Mm-hmm. But against decks where you're going to have board stalls, this mm-hmm. card is pretty good. Because, like, against Eldrazi, you start chipping away, making it unblockable, or drawing extra cards, or just growing your army every time they decide not to clear attackers. Because they don't want to attack into you and give you advantageous blocks, so they just pass turn, then you make everybody bigger. And then you pass mm-hmm. turn, they don't have a good attack, so they pass turn, you make everything bigger. So every turn they wait, your team just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And you could just slam it. It's not a summoning sickness effect. So I definitely think this card's pretty cool. The fact that all the abilities mean you really need to be committed to the board is a little unfortunate against, like, Supreme Verdict lists. But on its own, like, I think the card has got some potential to really take over. And it's a 2/4 for 3, so, like, Fatal Push, they have to have Revolt. Lightning Bolt's not good enough. Like, he's got a decent body to survive through a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
So my card, I think, is I'm a little bit less confident than your card as being an internal impact, but I think if it is an internal impact, it's going to be a huge one. And that is Mastermind's Acquisition. One that was spoiled today, people weren't exactly sure if it was going to be a real card or not. This is a sorcery speed, 2 black-black, so 4 mana. You choose one. You search your library for a card and put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. You don't have to show either of the cards you search for, so on either choice you have. So you search for a card, put it in your hand, it's Diabolic Tutor. And then your second option is you choose a card you own from outside the game, which in competitive play means your sideboard, and you put that card in your hand. Well, in any combo-based decks, this card seems insane. So, like, in Standard, I could see some decks wanting to run a few less Approach of the Suns and a few more of this. So if they need to, they can go find a board wipe, and if they don't need to, they just go to their sideboard and take out one of their Approach from the Suns out of the sideboard. Because also your Approach from the Suns in the sideboard is safe from Lost Legacy. So they can't, like, Lost Legacy out of the game anymore like they used to. So you just keep one Approach from the Second Suns in your sideboard so they can never stop that. But the bigger thing is Modern and Legacy and Vintage, especially, like, Legacy, if they can afford the 4 mana, the ability to have a card that allows me to go search my library for more Storm pieces if my Storm count's not high enough or I need more mana, or to go search my library for, like, an Echoing Truth post board, or search my sideboard for the Echoing Truth post board, or just go get my combo card, like my Tendrils, out of the sideboard. And so, like, keeping a card in your sideboard and being able to go tutor it protects you from, like, Surgical Extraction effects, protects you from Lost Legacy effects, from Memoricide effects, those kinds of things. And it gives you that flexibility. So you just have your sideboard be a bunch of silver bullets. Now, these typical wish cards are normally 2 to 3 mana. So at 4, it's a lot more. But normally those cards don't also let you search your library, and they normally restrict what you find. This finds you anything. So I personally think this card's going to have an impact as a 1 or 2 of in some Eternal format combo decks. And possibly even in Standard if they go, like, you know, 3-color Approach of the Second Sun and splash black for Mastermind's Acquisition. But I could be completely wrong. I've seen some people hate on it, but I think the card, that's a lot of, anytime I see a card say search your library for, I think that's really powerful. And then search outside of the game for something is just unparalleled power.
I just want to point out something about the art of this card. I've been looking at it more since you were talking about it. I think that's Tezzeret in the background opening up the planar bridge to steal something from Ixalan for Nicol Bolas.
Another piece of a nefarious puzzle. Mastermind. I mean, that could all go together, yeah. Mastermind could be Bolas, another piece of his nefarious... Yeah, that definitely sounds like pretty plausible.
Vraska was sent to retrieve something here, so...
Yeah, Vraska came for Nicol Bolas. And, like, they I know they said they're going to move away. They're going to move away from that story arc, but, like, this set was already in production when they decided to make these changes and move away from it, so... I mean, it definitely could be just another piece to set up for another set in like a year or two. That's very plausible. I never noticed that.
Yeah, I just was, you know, thinking like Tezzeret is supposed to use the planar bridge to meet Vraska after she's retrieved something. And I just see what looks to be like the planar bridge opening and some person in robes in the background there. So
maybe the Immortal Sun is a weapon that Nicol Bolas can use. He loved Second Suns on Amaket. Now he wants Immortal Suns on this one. Maybe.
Well, story-wise, the Azor... I don't know if you read yesterday about the Azor the Lawbringer, but that's actually the founder of the Azorius Senate.
Oh, I knew that. The moment I saw that card, I was like, oh, I know this. I know this could be a
thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I thought he was tied to it. I didn't realize he was the founder.
Yeah.
And he disappeared from Ravnica like 10,000 years ago. So
I'm curious if how he got here since he's not a planeswalker.
Well, he might be. It never said that he was not. Right. And I mean, considering that he made the Dragon Maze, the original Guild Pact, founded the Senate, and then if you look at Ixalan's binding, the card where it's got Jace, it's got an Azorius signet floating above him, or what looks to be with the triangle and the circles, and then there's some architecture in Ixalan that looks very similar to the Azorius signet. So it's very possible that he is a planeswalker, a pre-mending planeswalker that brought the Immortal Sun here initially.
That's true. That would be cool. I would enjoy that twist. So all right. So these are cards we think might impact Eternal formats. There are a lot of other cards in the set that are interesting and that we've talked about a lot, but we're gonna save that for like looking at the set as a whole once we get a full information out and if we find out if anything else happens to energy. So moving forward to our last segment for the night, because we're gonna keep tonight's show pretty short. So I can go test for this team event, is going to be our card design challenge. Our card design challenge this week is going to be that we have to design a tribal equipment. It can cost whatever we want it to cost. It is an equipment that needs to reward a player for loyalty to a tribe, so like maybe me for playing Merfolk, but it also punishes me if my opponent is more loyal to a tribe than I am, say Justin playing more pirates than I am or being more loyal to the pirate deck than I am. It needs to be able to be slotted in any Ixalan tribe deck to capture the flavor that all these tribes are fighting for the Immortal Sun. So all these weapons are getting picked up and thrown around and tossed around in the warfare. Does that make sense?
Oh, man, that completely ruins my idea.
Does it?
Yes, my idea was pirate specific.
No, it's got to be everybody's. You got to adapt it because it's... We want to capture that flavor that everybody is all in this city fighting for this Immortal Sun.
I can't make a barrel of oranges work for everybody, man.
Oh, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Well, so I'll go ahead and start us off. My design was a 2-mana, 2/2 equip. Whenever it comes into play, I name a tribe type. My opponent names a tribe type. Then it's the 2 to equip, and the equipped creature gets +1/+1 for each creature on the battlefield of the type that I named. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And my opponent gets to take control of this equipment if they have more of their tribe than the tribe I named. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
So it's a little convoluted. It's going to take some notes. That's why I'm not sure if it's super reasonable. But like, so if I say Merfolk and you say Pirates, then I get to equip my creature. And if I have 4 Merfolk, my Merfolk gets +4/+4. But if you get 5 pirates, you get control of my equipment at the beginning of the next end step.
Gotcha.
So if your tribe is overwhelming my tribe, you get it. Now this does favor the tribes. This probably favors vampires more than any other tribe because of the tokens.
favors dinosaurs mm-hmm. the least because they go the least wide. But it still is an opportunity for all the tribes to get involved and get taken over. Whichever tribe is the largest tribe gets this equipment. So that means if I now have, if I have all my merfolk and I bounce a couple of your pirates at the end of the turn, then I get the equipment back. So it's one of those things where it's just going to go back and forth. It's think of Contested Battleground from New Phyrexia. That's kind of, that was the thought behind the card.
Gotcha. So, so mine was thought up from a meme from, League of Legends about a character named Gangplank, because he eats oranges and everything is K, and he's a pirate. Okay. So my idea, and we can you can help me adapt this to work for all the tribes, but it was a barrel of oranges, and it was going to be four to play, four to equipped. The wielder is indestructible. When you attack, every pirate gains an orange token on them. You can sacrifice the orange token to regenerate said pirate.
To regenerate said pirate.
So, and, so if your opponent has more pirates than you do, you know, they get more creatures with, you know, regeneration than you do.
You could just take the exact same concept, which is you just name a creature type when this thing comes into play. And mm-hmm. all those creatures that you control of that type get the token.
Yeah.
Or,
I mean, it's easy. The mechanics are easily adaptable.
Yeah.
The flavor is not.
Right. Yeah. The flavor's a little zapped. So maybe instead of orange tokens, it becomes something like each creature of the chosen type gets a golden coin because they're all going mm-hmm. into this treasure city, and you can mm-hmm. they, you can make it like a miniature Umezawa Jite, where a creature can sacrifice a golden coin that's on it to either have you gain one life. Or to give it +1/+1, and like those, are, so you have two small portions of it, and that mm-hmm. way it's like almost like a fixed jeté.
Mm-hmm.
So, whenever it deals damage, you get to give two creatures this choice. Because if you give your whole army, then you can end up mm-hmm. with like gain 20 or something like that. But if it's like two creatures of the chosen type get a coin, and that coin can be cashed in for one life or +1/+1. On a creature yeah. of that type, that would be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see that. A fixed jit would be cool. I've been wanting to see a fixed jit for a while because broken jit is too good, but I would like to see a fixed jit.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows?
One day.
Yeah, one day, one day. So I don't know. I like the idea of trying to design cards within it. I think on one of our upcoming episodes, we're definitely going to do a designing a cycle. So like think charms from the RTR block. Where I'm going to give us, we'll start with monocolored cycles, so it's going to be like five of a color within a flavor, and we're going to have to design a card that fits that color pie for each one. Does that sound fair?
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, cool. We could do tribal charms for Ixalan.
That's true. Yeah. That might.
I mean, I know there is a pirate charm already, but
yeah, that might be something we work on doing. So that we're going to continue trying to stay. Most of our design is going to stay within the flavor of what we've got going on. If we have a master set come out, we might do like old format cards we'd like to see printed in Commander decks to go into Legacy and so forth. But we'll try to stay within the flavor. This week's episode I know was a little short. Time was a little tight, but starting next week we're going to be making sure we have plenty of content. And we're going to have a lot to go over. We're going to continue our card designs. Ideally, 30 minutes to 45 minutes is going to start being our goal anyway, so I don't think it was too bad. But as we wrap up tonight, where can they find you at, Justin?
At Justin Faulkner on Twitter. It's super easy. It's just my name.
Awesome. So you can find Justin at Justin Faulkner. You can find myself at Busted Sleeves. And you can find the show at EOT Newsflash. With any big events to roll through, we'll try to keep our updates on tournaments and stuff shared through our personal Twitter accounts and through EOT, and anytime we have content coming out, we'll have EOT try to share it out and post it as well. A big thanks for everybody for joining us this week. We'll be back next week. Please give us a follow on Facebook and Twitter. If you have anything you want to hear us talk about, any topics going on in the Magic community, whether it's game design or otherwise, any of that information that you're really trying to find an input on that you are missing, that you're not finding a good show coverage of, definitely please let us know. But otherwise, thank you very much. And do you want to sign us off, Justin?
All right, let's do it again.